So now that we've learned how stars live and die and heavy and elements are formed in the universe, we're going to turn to high school education in the United States, the conferences that we hold, and we're going to have a town meeting. So I'd like to call the, you know, to partake in this discussion, all the lecturers, Lars and all of you. We can just all stay up here. Simon's here. You've heard from two of them, but there are two more to come, and they're all experts on everything. Let's have and I'd also like to invite one of my board of directors, a bunch of friends from the community who are helping the KITP, Simon Rabb. Is he here? Simon, are you here? So if you could join us too. Simon is particularly interested in education and what the KITP might do and helping with secondary and school education across the country. So those of you who have been here before know we have this sort of freewheeling discussion. We don't need this anymore. We could raise this. And so we all gave we in your pack. In your packet, there's a questionnaire where we'd like to get some feedback as to, you know, how you benefit from these meetings, what you think we should do in the future, how you heard about it. And in the past, we've talked about some of the issues having to do with these particular teachers' conferences, whether you had any ideas of adding extra components to them. Should we? By and large, the feedback there has been pretty positive, and we've gotten some good suggestions. And so we're certainly interested in other suggestions that, but you do have a question to address some of that in the questionnaire. In the past, we've also discussed more general issues of science education and give a chance for you to share information among you and with us. But maybe, you know, here it would be better to sort of concentrate on this interaction between institutions like the KITP or you know, your institution, which also has a outreach program to secondary school teachers, or just in general comments. I mean, as always, we're interested in improving this format. We continue to be disturbed by the fact that we haven't sort of greatly enlarged our outreach. We have new. How many of you are new? This is the first time you've been here. Everyone who's raised their hand has the first. So that's pretty good. Something, we're of course glad to see the old timers here. but you know, there are empty seats in the room and we continue to have problems. You know, you look at the number of science high school teachers throughout the country. It's a factor of 1,000 times the people in this room. So we're reaching a very small number of people for some reason. We still don't exactly understand why or how to do better. We've gotten some suggestions in the past, and I'm not sure we can. So anyone who has a new idea, let's talk about it. So this is freewheeling. I would like to maybe start before we go with an idea that's come out of my director's council from Simon and others who of trying to enhance this communication that we're engaged in. We've talked in the past about doing various other things. We're lucky very much this time to have this opportunity to interact with Los Cumbres Observatory, which has its own outreach program, which is international, not to, and I'm sure you'll all enjoy that, and that I hope will succeed. But we're interested in other ideas that you might have that we could do that makes sense, and we have our own ideas, and maybe I'll just let Simon briefly describe an idea that has come out of our Directors' Council. Simon is a good friend and a member of our Directors' Council.
And a fellow scientist and engineer and some such. I have to say that my comments are going to rely entirely on a historical priority that I had. I had a couple of wonderful physics and chemistry teachers when I was in high school. And I went from playing football to entering the band, then getting into the science fair. And that directed my entire life from there on. And after that, there was 30 odd years of physics, medicine, and engineering. And part of our role here in outreach as part of the KITP is to figure out how we can, we know we have a problem, and everybody talks about we don't have enough people going into science. A lot of the youth, even my own children, as much as I try in one direction, they want to go in the other direction. We need to motivate more youth. And so that's part of, I think, what all scientists have to do as part of their payback to society, is find a way that we can mentor more young people and get them involved. So high school teachers, and from that perspective, you can understand why you folks are incredibly important, because you light the first spark. And if you can each influence one student to enter into science in a dramatic and important way, then you change a lot of lives and you change the trends that are occurring in America today. So we have a number of ideas, and they're very much just very preliminary, and I'd like to just hand these out, just to pass them back. And I don't expect to talk about these in any detail right now because we don't have enough time. But what I would do is welcome you over lunchtime to perhaps meet with us and just chat about some of these ideas so that some good things can come from them. But one of the ideas that it's number three on the list in there is talking about actually having a contest. There's monetary reward. It's always important to have both a good feeling and monetary rewards. We're looking at creating a contest for professors or for high school teachers who have come to bring back that which they've learned from this conference and present it back in their own communities, either their students or to fellow teachers, and have a contest for the quality of that work. Could be just as simple as a PowerPoint. We haven't worked out the details, and that's why I said this was preliminary. The other idea is to have a mentorship program where KITP individuals tie themselves to particular students that you would recommend. Perhaps ways that the KITP could involve itself also with science fairs and promotion of those kind of ideas and inspiration of students. So when you go back and you speak to your other teachers and you have some ideas, we would welcome you to communicate those with us and try in some way to motivate more students into science, indirectly our effort with you and then your effort with your students. Discussion could be started by, does anybody have ideas how you have your own reasons for deciding on how to come here? What motivated you to come, and what do you think we could do better to motivate more teachers around the country to come?
Somebody wants to speak.
I have never seen this advertised in the AAPT, and that seems to me to be a perfect venue.
I agree with that. I recently joined the AAPT to try to understand it. There's actually a number of contests in that organization as well that I think that we should join. So that's a terrific idea.
Dan, isn't it advertised in the AAPT? I think it is. The fact that you haven't seen it doesn't...
Yeah, somebody told me it was advertised, but I couldn't see it either, so I... Yeah, very late, okay. Really? Okay. Well, that's something we can clearly do better.
Another thing you might want to advertise in would be maybe a little advertisement like in Scientific American or some of the publications. Not all physics teachers are members of the professional associations, but virtually everybody reads the more popular magazines.
Well, how did you learn about this?
I learned from word. Would you mind let the education
page know? We've had problem getting local people from Santa Barbara letting.
Offering them a free ticket to Santa Barbara didn't work for those people.
One organization that reaches a lot of teachers around the nation is QuarkNet.
QuarkNet?
QuarkNet, yeah. I never saw anything in a newsletter.
Never heard of it?
No. You've heard of QuarkNet. QuarkNet. We don't advertise it. Marty told. What?
Rayburn? Yeah. Tom Jordan. In your own thinking process, what motivated you to come? Like, was it the ticket? Was it the prospect of getting away from winter weather? What was it? You have a mic down there.
One of the things that I've come to all these, but I'm a confessed nerd. And I think that watching this and having seen these, that a lot of my fellow teachers who teach physical science would also be interested in this. But the level, if nothing else, the fact that it's into Institute of Theoretical Physics, I think they look at it and go, oh, I can't go there. I won't get it. So maybe somehow that...
Okay, so there's some fear. Okay. Well, since these guys were described as knowing everything, I can imagine why.
none of you learned about this through looking through the. Good portion of you have been here many times, but those of you who this was new didn't get onto it through our website. Anyone here discover this through our website? Who?
I would say that you talking about advertising in periodicals and everything, and you look at those and there's a million conferences that you can go to, and how can you tell looking at an ad what you want to spend your time and money on? And I think for this thing, the best ambassador you have are the people in this room. If you can come up with some small package, a PowerPoint program or a small brochure or something, and we can go out and we can address, we're all members of local physics groups at the high school physics teachers in Kane County, something like that, stand up and do 10 minutes and say, oh my God, you won't believe what I just saw. I went out to California and there's these guys had brains running out of their ears and they got great slideshows and they're interesting, engaging, and you actually have...
So like a referral program. Well,
that's a great idea, but why do we need to put it together? First of all the material is on the website and you can put it together, right?
To make it easier for us to do.
After all, we were asking for their help.
I was just going to say, I think a lot of us in here are probably pretty busy, and if we come here, I came here to kind of get away from a lot of things, and I've heard a lot of people say that. It's nice, it's relaxing, and if you make some sort of incentive like... there's an award or monetary thing, then I'm going to do that because that's the type of person I am, you know, and I really don't want to do that, honestly. So if I want to come back, and I want to relax, and I want to hear all there is to hear, and I want to get away, so I would rather you don't make that. I'm just trying to be honest here. So that's, yeah. But anyway, that's the only comment I have.
I mean, one question on my mind has been, how do we multiply this? What is the real multiplier here? And part of it, obviously, is we'd like to have the room be full, but that's not even, you know, that's a 30% effect. In my mind, the real question is there a mechanism by which you, in your day-to-day life, see a way that we can really multiply the value of this beyond just your classroom? And I think that, in my mind, is the real question that we would like to address. You know, it's obviously best if the room is full, but that, to me, that's a 30% effect. You know, where is the factor of 10 that we can get? And is there some mechanism that would be great to get input on? And anything in that context that we can help with is what we would need to know.
Can I ask you how many are directly involved with science fairs? Just out of curiosity.
I think that if you had a brief presentation at the teacher conferences, the national teacher conferences for science and physics teachers, you'll multiply your effect right there. There's so many that go to those.
You know, one thought that I have is basically extending your email lists, and perhaps you might be able to get it extended. Like there's a lot of people that are active in Southern California physics that I don't see here, okay? And so perhaps you might put some outreach to just the Southern California area in particular.
If you have specific suggestions for increasing the advertising, we're other people know about this. Put it down. Let's move on to other topics. I want to call on Bob Eisenberger here, who used to be our boss. He ran the working director of the NSF Mathematics and Physical Sciences, which is the main source of funding for the KIT. But now he's retired and he's retired physics teacher in Santa Fe. And he wanted to make a remark, maybe from both of these perspectives.
No, I want to be very brief, David. Thank you. I just wanted to say that even if you were to increase the number of people who wanted to come here tenfold, the KITP probably can't do that all itself. So I'm wondering whether it wouldn't make sense for you to try to build partnerships with other great educational, logical, scientific places around the country, like the CFA, for example, or like the Santa Fe Institute, or like the University of Chicago. I don't know where, but do something along those lines.
Maybe even the NSF, God forbid. the part of the problem is we try to do what we do best. We are not a in-house research activity like those others. We are a place where visitors come, and we hold conferences and programs. And we put together those programs. We try to take advantage of our visitors, not so much our local people. Though we have one of them gave a great talk this morning. But the others, as you all saw, are visitors who happen to be here for one of our conferences. So we put together these groups. We have very high leverage, but we're very different from these other places. And we would love to cooperate, of course, but we have to figure out a way of making that really work. But I was more interested in your perspective from a national, you know, experience at the NSF from a national perspective of the NSF, you know, the U.S. government is very interested in outreach, so they say. But they don't have that many good ideas either. And to some extent, you know, you all are the frontline soldiers and know what, you know, where outreach hits the students and the young people, you know the problems better than we do, or the NSF for that matter, and can really give us advice, which we do seek, as I think is what Lars said, how to increase the multiplier, how to make this kind of thing that we bring to you, and you bring back to your classrooms, really have an impact where it matters, which is not, you know, primarily not with you, but with the student in the end.
Well, I have a mic already.
Well, speak.
And it actually approaches a question I think that probably is already on everybody else's minds, and since this is an open forum, and I think it concerns the AP courses. There's an awful lot of physics teachers who would love to be learning more and more of the physics that you can present to us, but they spend most of their time attending conferences and working with their students on those mandatory AP courses in the curriculum set, which of course very rarely cover any of the new physics or any of the new exciting material. They're forced to do the standard mechanics and electricity and magnetism at the calculus level, which brutalizes the students and takes all the teachers' time and energy. And so if somehow the universities can understand that these AP courses have little or no contribution to the learning of science and are simply used as admission devices to the university, and have some kind of reform in that area. Thanks.
I think that if part of the idea is to get more students involved as scientists, as physicists, students seem to do what they have some grasp on, what they know people do. They want to become doctors because they see doctors every day. A lot of people become teachers because they see teachers every day. My students have very little idea what a physicist does or what a scientist does, and that is one of the reasons that I come here, among many, to try to give them an idea of what physicists are doing and take that back to them and say, this is something that if you work hard enough, you could do. But beyond me telling them, they have very little grasp on that. And I don't know if some kind of forum where the students could actually contact physicists and ask them questions they have, you know, maybe online.
That's a very good point. And I wanted to tell you about another outreach program that we began here about a year ago, which at least initially was quite successful, and that was sending our postdocs, our young postdocs who have just come here, graduated, and are starting their research careers here, out to the high schools to give lectures. And this was an idea that grew out of a collaboration with the Natural History Museum here, which had contact with the high school teachers in the local area. And initially it seemed like a great success. The students really, as you say, were surprised often to see these young people whom they could identify with, whom looked like them, and were doing science and were excited about it and had interesting science to talk about, but also were clearly role models that they could emulate, perhaps feel some connection with more than they would with somebody like me. Unfortunately, this program has run into trouble locally to the local people here. Although the schools originally invited some of these people, it's been increasingly hard for us to get this, maybe again because of all the demands on high school science courses. You have to get this material done before the examinations, et cetera, et cetera. So this program has run into problems, but I'm very interested in your reaction to that kind of idea. These young postdocs were tutored into how to, you know, what to expect in a high school class and what kind of lecture to give. But, you know, they're just enthusiastic, they're role models, they're young. And this is something that could be copied nationwide. I mean, there's no reason why you, if you thought this was a good idea and had time to fit this guest lecturer, young postdoc, into your schedule at your high school, you couldn't go to your local university physics department and suggest this to each, you know, local research university. I think that in today's world it would be quite a welcome suggestion, and people would discover that postdocs are, as ours were, quite willing and delighted to do this, and it's something that you could initiate. You don't have to wait for the universities to do, but you could do locally in your own.
Something, if you don't have contacts in those physics departments, I mean, our user base are, you know, 1,000 physicists who come here every year from all institutions internationally. So if you don't have a point of contact at your local university in the physics department that you would feel comfortable with, that is probably something we could try to work to help you with, which is to point you to at least a professor who will respond. And it might take, you know, our director to get them to respond, but David's good at getting a response to things, so that might be something we could help with.
I guess I've been given this mic only because I wanted to thank Daniel Hone and the KITB. I've been lucky enough now to have already twice this semester in my modern physics seminar received their young graduate student Sean Hartnell, and he's pleased to come and wants to come a second time and a third time and a fourth time. And my students, of course, would rather have them 3 days a week. And so anything any other departments can do to help, of course, will be outstanding. Thanks again.
Dr. Gross, I just wanted to respond to a question that you asked earlier. Why should we come here if we can get the information online or if we can get it even in textbooks? Personally, it's my third time here as a high school physics teacher, and I found it extremely stimulating. I get a lot of personal growth from coming here, but mostly I get a sort of impetus or enthusiasm when I go back and I share this with my colleagues. I share the excitement with my students. It gives me the energy to actually finish the year. We're as high school physics teachers, we're in a curricular gridlock, you know, and we're limited to what we can do. And what I've done over the years is try and finish my physics course at least a week earlier so that I can do some enrichment, so that I can do, you know, I can bring this to them and share it with them and use some of the media that we've been directed to at these conferences over the last couple of years. So personally, I find that I've grown a lot from this experience. And if I had to do it on my own, I don't think that I'd be able to find the time or get this or the stimulation to actually put it all together outside of what we're supposed to do it in a textbook.
I wasn't suggesting that coming here wasn't much more valuable and enriching than just the website, but I'm just interested in the impact of the website.
One thing that I would like to mention is along the comments of what he said about the impact of teachers influencing individual students, I was fortunate enough this year to be invited by NASA to bring three of my students to one of their facilities, and so I took three students to this facility, and I guarantee you that has impacted my student population greater than anything in the world. I now have a junior class that I've had at least 30 people come ask me if they invite me again, can I go? I wish there was some way we could form a nationwide partnership of schools that would allow students to actually get involved. I mean, if it's nothing more than seeing an electron microscope, my kids enjoyed, the best thing they enjoyed about NASA wasn't the buoyancy tank or anything like that, it was the materials lab. They were working on a piece of the shuttle tiles with an electron microscope, and they had to drag my kids out of there. So, I mean, there's kids that really have a thirst for this, but if we could just expose these kids with something besides lecture and talk.
Yeah, I agree, and we can't compete with that because we're theorists, and all we have are blackboards.
I just wish there was
But we do what we can in our own way. But I agree with you completely, and that, again, can be found at every university, you know, every big researcher, and there are hundreds of research universities that have electron microscopes and fascinating materials labs. And again, I'm just interested, how many of you actually have some connection with your local university where students can, so there is already quite a bit of this. Yes.
One of the things that I experienced last summer, which was pretty good, and I had actually done before with some of my students, was a video conference. I know many of my students, you know, they hear some of the names, they hear me mention the names in, you know, on TV programs and such. They see some of these physicists, but to be able to actually have a video conference with them, I think would be something, you know, maybe associated with one of these things instead of you you know, you pay to fly me out here, and I greatly appreciate it, but I wouldn't expect you to fly my 125 students out here so that they could have a similar experience, but something could be set up with video conferencing, especially since that technology is becoming so prevalent across many school districts now.
We've tried that a bit. We're trying it again with high school teachers of Exploratorium. It isn't easy to make it work. So let's take this as an example. We run this conference here. We record it, and it's played in, not in real time, but it's up there tomorrow, the whole thing, including what I'm saying now to the, you know, via that camera, what you're saying, you're recorded. That is a way of experiencing the whole thing, and not in real time. But you're talking about something interactive. So that's not easy to arrange 100 students here, 100 there, a few thousand interacting. It's possible perhaps to get a few questions, maybe one from every 10. Not easy to do. And who would organize it? Could you, if we were to tell you, well, we're going to hold something next month, totally interactive video-wise, which we would do. That would be cheaper. Would you be in a position to get the group together and get them there at a specific time? And but coordinated across the country with. The practicalities are not non-trivial. And NASA has big resources.
I was going to remark on the
anyone who speaks should identify themselves. Then we would, you know, people would begin to know everybody else. I'm sorry we didn't do this already, but let's start.
Yan Lewin from Illinois. I was wondering about the increase in participants. Along that line, not only the teachers. If a student, if the funding is available, more than one student accompanying the teacher might also not only increase, but that word of mouth, and when the student go back and tell their peer group, and the teacher himself also, I think, would be in a position to effectively advertise and so on.
It's a matter of budget. We've tried to do that a bit, I think, Dan. With local students, right? We did some years ago. It wasn't that successful, I must say. Because there weren't that many who took advantage of it.
Could you restate the question?
The suggestion was for every teacher every teacher would bring a student.
No.
And this would have, of course, a great impact on that student. It would be a way of increasing.
Could you restate the question? What exactly, what information do you want?
I don't want any more information about how to increase participation. This is an open forum. We're discussing issues of science education, what we may do, what your problems are.
My name is Francisco Isaguirre, and I am a teacher at a community college in Southern California. twice a year we have the Southern California chapter of the AAPT meetings, twice a year in the spring and in the fall. And at those meetings I have announced this thing, because we get to have 30 or 40 people in there, and most of them are, at least half of them are high school teachers, and the other ones are, you know, in universities. And they tell me, how do I know more about it? So I have over here proof of that. This lady over here asked me, how do I do it? And I said, well, go to the website. She went to the website, and you have so much stuff in there that she couldn't find it. She couldn't find. She called me back, and he says, I just can't figure it out. And so I had to give her instructions item by item, go to this page, click here, and so forth. And here she is for the first time. So what I suggest is that you have a page on your website dedicated to the instructions of how to how to get here.
We do have such a page, no? Yeah. We do have such a page. Once the conference is decided upon, there is such a page. But it could be improved. Please write specific thing improvements, specific things that can be done on the questionnaire. Yeah.
Yeah. My name's Lynn Stark. I'm community college here in Santa Barbara. If we look at your problem from the other point of view, which is you do have here a handful of interested and committed teachers, what can we learn from you that will actually put us a little further out on the cutting edge? And what I've noticed as an issue, certainly nationally and globally now, is climate change. I notice you have a conference coming up next year on the physics of climate change. I'm actually a little ahead of the curve on meteorology, but in talking with my colleagues, this is a topic which many of us are undereducated in. And I'm just offering it as a suggestion for another one of your teachers' conferences. We need to raise our own skill level in talking about this issue with our students.
That is indeed one of the likely of the topics we could choose next year. So we choose the topics for these conferences depending on the array of programs and conferences that we're going to hold in a given year. Next year, indeed, in a bit of a stretch for us, we have a program called The Physics of Climate. So, you know, even physicists, theoretical physicists, are interested in the climate. And some of them are beginning to look at the basic sciences that underlie a lot of the issues having to do with climate, much of which are not very well understood. So there are many fascinating questions that physicists, intellectual imperialists as they are, think they can solve, or at least contribute to, are very important issues having to do with the climate. So there is a program that will involve not only physicists, of course, but meteorologists and ecologists and others who are going to be for 3 to 4 months addressing the physics of the climate. It'll be a really very interesting program, I think. And there will be a conference. And we are thinking of associating with that conference a public forum, which is another kind of activity we run. But a teachers' conference would be also a very good idea. This is a bit of a stretch for many of you, right? Probably not related to what you teach in physics courses, even at the extra week at the end of the year. But how many of you would be interested if I could pull you in a... Everyone's interested in the climate. The other possibility, for a competitor, for example, would be elementary particle physics. We have a program on elementary particle physics. There LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, is opening next year. We have a program on that. There'll be a conference. Should we have a teacher's conference on elementary particle physics?
Yeah. Make it a 2-day conference.
Sorry? How many would be interested in a teacher's conference, no matter what it's devoted to?
Just feed me.
One of our speakers here is a distinguished astrophysicist from Holland, and maybe I should ask Ed to comment on, you know, the perspective of secondary school education, the problems they face, and how it looks different or similar over there.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here.
And your problems look very much like the problems we have in our country, I must say. I started studying astronomy in the 50s. You can study astronomy apart from physics in my country. And in my year in the university when I started, there were 120 who were starting in physics, and I was the only one doing astronomy. And then everybody said to me, you can never get a job in astronomy. And that was true, because there were only 10 permanent positions in astronomy in my country. And so the only thing an astronomer could become is a physics teacher or a mathematics teacher. And so I took the degrees to become a physics and mathematics teacher. I was in front of the class, like all of you are. But strange enough, in the 60s, the university was all expanded and they needed new people. And I was lucky enough, after having taught, say, for a year only in high school, to become a university person. And at that time, in my high school days, in the 50s, in a small high school with only 500 students, in our country that is small nowadays because the high schools have expanded enormously. There are 2,000 students in a high school nowadays. It's not very nice, I can tell you. In my days, 500 students, and we had a lot of teachers with a PhD degree. All my physics teachers and mathematics teachers all had PhDs. We had about 15 in my school with a PhD. Nowadays, there is nobody in our high schools who has a PhD in anything. So a lot has changed in our society. In my days, a lot of students went into physics in the 60s and the 50s, and in mathematics. We find it very difficult nowadays to find students who want to go into physics. And this is not only in my country, the Netherlands, it's all over Europe. Although Germany may be a little bit of an exception, I don't know. But in England, they have the same problem. In France, they have the problem. So we try to motivate people to go into physics and mathematics, and our society needs a lot of such people, but the number of students is dropping all the time. And in my university in Amsterdam, the number is, it used to be in the 70s and in the 80s, we had something like 120 students, freshmen a year coming in. Nowadays it's 45. While the number of kids has not changed that much. And I think it's due to the richness of the country. All of them want to do business economics and become a manager somewhere and earn a lot more than a physicist earns. There is also this problem which you mentioned, that it's not very clear what you're going to do as a physicist, actually. I mean, in my days it was clear you became a teacher, most of them. But nowadays, it's not so clear, and very few of our students go into teaching, actually. And our feeling is that the biggest problem is in high schools, because the high school teacher is really the person who is going to motivate the students to choose science as something to go to study, as something exciting they want to go to do. In my case, for example, in my high school class of 20, five of them went to do physics in the university, and three of them became a university professor later. So, but nowadays, very few students want to do this. We try to do something from the university by giving master classes of a whole week in our university for students coming from all over our country. Our country is very small. It is only as big as your Connecticut or Vermont or something like that. And so we can get students from all over the country coming to the university for a whole week easily. We also give teachers conferences like you have here. And again, because the country is so small, the teachers can come easily. They're very enthusiastic about coming to the university, and not only my university does this, also Leiden does it, Groningen University does it. We are faced with this problem, how to get students motivated for becoming a scientist. And that's a general European problem. The EU has mentioned in Lisbon in the year 2000 that the EU, with its 350 or something million people, wants to become the most competitive society in the world, beating the United States, by having enormous numbers of scientists. And now we are in 2007 and they have not gotten anywhere so far as I can see. And I think the whole, for us, the it's clear to me in my country that the bottleneck is in the high schools. And so you as high school teachers are really the most important people for your country, of course, to get students motivated for science. But the same is the case in my country. But we are really
problems, but no solutions.
No solutions, no, no. Well, your solution in this country is you can import people from India and from China for doing science, but because these people all speak English. But in Europe, we have all these different languages, and an Indian or a Chinese does not like to go to continental Europe because he has to learn German or Dutch or Danish or Swedish or whatever, and so they skip Europe and just take the plane to go to the United States.
I want to hear from another distinguished member of our lecturers, Bob Kirshner from Cambridge.
Well, I just wanted to say that a couple of the things that we've heard here have really resonated with me. I went last year to my high school to teach a class, which was kind of fun. And I did all the wrong things. I talked the whole time, never listened to the kids. I had so much to tell them. But there was one good part to it, which was that in my high school, which is a suburban high school outside of Boston, in addition to physics classes, there are also sometimes astronomy classes. Which, and I found that the range of math level and sort of academic preparation for the kids was very wide. So these classes really reached quite a broad group. And it was a lot of fun. So we heard a little bit about the teaching to the test, especially the AP test. And I understand that that creates a certain kind of rigidity to the whole curriculum. But this is a way around that, was these astronomy courses, which I found was very refreshing. The other thing is to say I'm at Harvard in the astronomy department, and I'm involved in undergraduate education, and even with admissions from time to time. And there, the AP test is something which we're trying to get away from. That is, the sense that having done the AP course in high school would kind of substitute for the first year of the college curriculum is something you know that we weren't completely convinced that that's true. And so, at least at our place, there's some discussion, and probably ought to be a broader one, about what the role of those courses really is, and whether they substitute for college courses, or whether they are kind of a, as someone said here today, kind of a badge for admissions. I think, you know, some unfortunate and some unintended consequences have come from providing those courses and the way we evaluate them when we do undergraduate admissions. So, those are the only thing I really wanted to say, except that you didn't have a chance to read the paper this morning because you've been here busy working, but I did. And I read the long story about Barack Obama in his high school in Hawaii. And it's quite good, and it goes and talks about the courses that he took and so on. And they kind of evaluate him as a student. And they say, well, he was pretty good, but he was not really outstanding, one of his classmates said. You know, she said, we had nuclear physicists in our class.
You want to say something?
Yeah, that sounds good. I don't know, very briefly, I could mention that we at GINA, we pretty much face similar questions about outreach and you guys do here. I mean, what is good outreach and what is meaningful outreach? And we always wonder, I mean, what people really get out of it and what we can do to improve things. So these programs, and we have a similar program, but it's a little bit different. It's called PAN. And it's a two-week program for the teachers, and in the second week they can actually bring students, and students can also, high school students can also directly apply to it, and then we kind of mix them together. And the teachers are ahead of the curve because they had the first week, and then they do research together and they build detectors and things like that. What always strikes me, I mean, people come and they have a great time, apparently, and, you know, we give them questionnaires and everybody's happy and thinks it's great and they come back. And I think that's very important, I think. And from talking to people, that's, of course, a great value to just get away from things, as some people said, and kind of rejuvenate and get new energy, and then you can survive another year teaching physics. And that's certainly good. But we always ask ourselves, is there anything beyond that that we can do, and it'll be very interesting to. I mean, we bounce off ideas. One thing, for example, what we're thinking about is trying to show people ways to teach according to the teaching standards or, you know, AP courses using modern physics material. I mean, mechanics, electromagnetism, all these things you can teach with nuclei or with stars. This is also starting in the undergraduate curriculum that people try to bring into the textbooks modern physics, forefront physics, exciting physics. And maybe one idea we had is we could maybe create a kind of little lesson plans or curriculum that's oriented by, along the standards, how to do these things. Other things we bounced off was maybe create a network of alumni in these programs that would kind of communicate after the program's over. But then I also understand there's very little time and you're very busy, so once you're out of here, maybe you don't want to hear anything about it for a year. So that would be kind of a question I had. Is there anything beyond the actual 2 weeks?
Catherine wants to break about. Dan, you wanted to say something. Dan is our director of outreach and education at the GAN.
Well, a lot of people want to talk, and it's always hard in an even period of half hour or whatever we've had for everybody to generate their own ideas or to present them. And since the modern means of communication is via the internet, I would simply like to encourage you to, if you are inspired later on as you go back home with some idea that relates to the things we've asked about here, to write either to me or to David, and I'm just going to put up the email address on the board so that you can do that.
Before we break, I just want to know whether any of you had any reaction to the proposals that Simon passed around, in particular the third proposal there, which has to do with participants in this conference. So if there's any immediate thoughtful reaction, I'd be interested in hearing. Over there.
Woody Maxwell, Ventura. One of the things that I know as teachers we want is, if it's a good lesson, we want to just plug it in, because you often don't have time to make a new one. So I thought the idea of a PowerPoint and some of us making it and getting a prize for it gives that impetus to do it, and you don't have to if you just want to hang out. But then it could be put into high schoolese so that teachers who may not be teaching AP level but teaching general level, and I'm thinking of a couple of our teachers, could use it and use it for the lower level students who may become inspired later to work hard and go into physics. The AP kids might not, but the lower level kids are ones we could target with something like that. And then they could just use it, and we could write it for whatever our standards are, but fit it right in.
So you like the idea? Okay. Anyone else?
I think I was going to say something about, Hendrik. I think it would be probably more meaningful if instead of a PowerPoint, if it was like a lesson plan. At least that would make it more meaningful to me, since it is a teachers' conference. And if maybe instead of three speakers, I like workshops where I can bounce ideas off of other teachers, where and I know that they are professors, but and they do have a lot of knowledge, but sometimes they would talk in terms of things that they know about, and then if some people have a little bit of a higher level of understanding and some people are not quite there. So maybe if we had some breakout sessions after they talked, and then we all could figure out how can we incorporate what they talked about specifically at a level where we're all ready, and then we could develop some sort of lesson plan that we could use and that would be relevant in our specific classroom and the classes that we teach, you know, because we're not all teaching the same lesson. And then we could have some sort of prize if we chose to do that and participate in a lesson. And then everybody would have access to those lessons, everybody who participated, and then we could share it with the people that we work with. And that would be and then the people that we work with would see, wow, this is awesome, and they would probably want to, and we could share it even with our organizations. Like, I'm a part of the St. Louis Area Physics Teachers, and that would be a lot of, you know, free advertising, if you will. So.
Okay, I think we have to break at this point for lunch. Lunch, again, is outside in the courtyard, and we hope we've tried to distribute the physicists, the lecturers, and others among the tables so that we can all interact with each other. And we'll see you after lunch.